I could just get Braden to come to my house and play that every morning when I get out of bed. Okay. In case you missed that, that was ABC by the Jackson 5. And ABC has another meaning here at First Unitarian. It's our annual budget campaign. So I have a few announcements before I make an introduction. First, the Oktoberfest themed celebration lunch for the annual campaign. The RSVP deadline is today. But I have heard under good authority that they'll probably accept it for the next few days. But get on that so they can get your schnitzel and things together. The second thing is the ABC letter to the congregation has made it into the mail. So if you have email, I bet you it's sitting there. If it's snail mail, it'll be your Monday treat. Now, when you consider your pledge for 2018, you consider your budget for sure. Those of us have more means, some have less. But you also consider the value of belonging to this community. So I would like to introduce Nancy Dobbs, who I was going to say has been a member for a million years. As it turns out, it's only 22. And she's going to share with you the value that she places on membership here. Nancy, where'd you go? Oh, honey.
So I have been invited to speak briefly, share what I value about First Unitarian. I have been involved with, as Marion said, with the community for over 22 years, so brief is very difficult. Here goes. I value the Sunday services, the music, the children that I have had the joy of singing with and watch grow up. Hi, Marie. The children's program, especially the Our Whole Life or OWL Sexuality program. The beautiful building and grounds that host a wide variety of events and organizations and hosted the Children's International Summer Village this summer. I value our diversity and spiritual perspectives. I value the generosity with both time and money of this congregation for causes of social justice and for helping others locally and around the world. Probably what I value most is the community I have found here. We have worked together over the years to accomplish what cannot be done by individuals alone. I can hardly scratch the surface of all I value here and why in the time given me, 60 seconds to 90 maybe. But I would be happy to elaborate if you ask me.
Wonderful bunch of kids up here, but oh great. I was just going to invite anyone who wants to come forward, and Gabe's coming forward. Any young people who are out in the chairs who would like to come forward for the time for all ages? Now's the time that I'm going to talk with you all about our theme for the month of healing, and I'm going to do it by talking about my neighbors from when I was a kid growing up. So I grew up in a small town, about 6,000 people in the town that I grew up in. So I think that's a pretty small town. Some people are probably laughing because they think that's actually a big town. You think that's a big town? Okay. So I thought that was a small town. And I grew up mostly just with my mom. So it was my mom and me. And we lived in what's called a duplex. Does anybody know what a duplex is? Gaia knows what a duplex is. What's a duplex? Yeah, it's like one house that's kind of cut in half. And one family lives on one side and one family lives on the other side. It was like a big house, one roof, but two families in it. And the people who lived on the other side of the same building was this family called the Pitos, the Pito family, Rick and Betty and their son and daughter, Mike and Michelle. And the Pitos were like, they called me their adopted daughter because they took care of me so often when my mom was working. I would go home from school to their house sometimes, and I would just spend a lot of time with them. And one of my favorite dinners was Betty Pito's baked macaroni and cheese. It's kind of ruined me for all those mac and cheeses that come out of the box, like the Annie shells and things, not nearly as good as Betty Pito's baked mac and cheese. But there was one day in particular that I was thinking of them when I was thinking about healing this week, and it was when they helped me when I got hurt one day. So I used to love to play, because it was kind of a small town, you could play in the street, which not that safe, so you really shouldn't do it. But I was playing in the street one day, and I was playing with a Nerf football with some friends of mine. You'll find it hard to believe that I liked to play football when I was a kid. So I was playing football in the street with some friends of mine, and somebody threw a really long pass, and I was trying to do one of these fancy schmancy over-the-shoulder catches where you're not really looking where you're going. You're just looking to try to watch the ball into your hands and catch it. And at the same time I was trying to do that, a friend of mine was riding his bicycle back toward to try to catch a ball because he didn't think I would get there in time to catch the ball. So guess what happened? Kaplow! I ran right into his bicycle, and I bit through my lip right here. In fact, there's still a little scar right there. When I look at it every once in a while, I go, oh, that's from where I bit through my lip when I bumped into my friend when I was like 7. It's still there. So I was bleeding, and I was crying, and I was a mess. And my mom was at work still, so I went to the Pito's house. And they immediately helped me out. They got me ice and Band-Aid and everything. And I was totally fine. And I thought, we all need places like that in the world. Not just our own families, but friends and people we can go to help us feel better when we're feeling a little bit hurt. And so then I thought, I'm going to tell the kids that story because I hope that our church is like that for you. I hope that our church is like the Pito's house for you guys. That it's the place that when you fall down or you're not feeling so good or you're feeling kind of grumpy and you've already heard everything your mom or your dad or your grandparents have to say about how to feel better and you want to hear a different story about how to feel better, you could ask all these people, and they might have some great ideas about things that you could do to help you feel better. So I hope that you will feel at home here and that you will find lots of adults to love and to care about you, because we do. Can we join hands now and have a prayer before you leave for your classes? Spirit of life and of love, we give thanks for all the people who love us. For all the people who loved us when we were little and who love us now, who make a space not only in their homes but in their hearts to see us smile, to give us joy, and to help us when we are hurt. For all those people and for these wonderful children who light the way for us, we give our thanks. Blessed be, and amen.
Good morning. So this month, our Share the Plate is Habitat for Humanity Victoria. Now, Habitat for Humanity is kind of the tortoise in the hare and the tortoise race of nonprofits. There's so many things that go on in the world that we want to fix, so many things we want to heal, that it's sometimes difficult to do it slowly. Habitat for Humanity was formed in 1976, and it has built 800,000 plus houses around the world. And it does it one house at a time. And these are houses for people to own, to have. In Canada, the model is people put in 500 hours of volunteer labor for their homes, and they get an interest-free mortgage. They must pay their mortgage. Right now, there's a new one starting in Central Saanich in a couple of days for a family with two kids. They're looking at planning, they're going through the planning permission stage for another one in North Saanich. And they're also looking more long-term for something in Souk, probably a bigger kind of a build. So when we talk about healing our world, when we look at what makes a difference, this is one of those models that is very slow, but very sure. And all those families now have houses, have roofs over their head that are theirs and that they can pass on. So we hope that this is a nonprofit that will speak to you. There's more information in the hallway. They're looking for volunteers for a bunch of different things. And the other wonderful thing about it, they have a ReStore that you may or may not be familiar with. The ReStore his people donate building materials, they donate renovation stuff, they donate all sorts of things, and you go there and you buy the stuff for whatever it is that you're wanting to do. And the Restore funds the administration. So everything that's donated goes to a build. It's a wonderful model. The Restore is a great thing. I used to work in one in the Comox Valley. It's lots of fun. But it's a wonderful model, and so you know that every dollar that you go goes to a family to help them have a house of their own. Thank you.
I invite you now into a time of reflection, contemplation, meditation. Begin with the words of a poet, and then invite you to use some silent time to focus on healing. Healing for your own spirit, healing for someone you love about whom you are worried this morning, healing for our larger world, a community of people, or perhaps healing for the planet itself. First, the poem, Dew Light, by W.S. Merwin. Now in the blessed days of more and less, when the news about time is that each day there is less of it, I know none of that as I walk out through the early garden, only the day and I are here, with no before or after. And the dew looks up without a number or a present age. For all that we carry in the crowded sanctuaries of our hearts, may we be mindful. May we be grateful where we can. And may we continue to hold hope. Blessed be, and amen.
I think we both saw something of ourselves in the other. She was in her late 60s and was a big, tall woman like me, a jumble of strength and vulnerability. She had retained her deep kindness throughout a hard life. It had been a hard year for me. She noticed and invited me over for tea after church. With some trepidation, I said yes. And now we were sitting together in her small apartment, sipping for a while in silence. I was too tired out to try and make small talk. Her story started haltingly, punctuated with pauses to glance up and check how I was doing. She knew I'd been through a rough breakup, so she shared with me what she had to give. Her own story about the end of a troubled marriage in her youth, about the aftermath in her own life. Emotion would rise in her voice, sometimes from reliving her story, and sometimes in sympathy with my response. We sat together, and she shared, and I listened, and I used up her Kleenex. She was willing to be openly sad and suffer with me, and it helped me heal. This memory is simple, but so precious to me. With the passage of time, as I relive this moment now, I feel hope and peace. She helps me believe in my ability to be there for another, in the ability of every one of us to simply be there for each other. And I am hopeful because her gesture was so small and humble. She did not get everything right, or say the perfect words, or even do much. She didn't fix anything. She was simply willing to be herself and be with me exactly as I was. So when you are hurting and I don't know what to do, I will try to follow in her footsteps. To just do what I can, to be myself, to be with you.
Thank you for that choir. St. Francis's words still hold a lot of power. Make me an instrument. Before I begin, I just want to put a little plug in for two things happening next Sunday. Take the preacher's prerogative here. There's a lot going on in the life of our community. You may have noticed we are entering the season of busyness, and next Sunday I will be hosting an orientation session for those of you who are new or newish to the congregation and want to learn more. And next Sunday night, we are going to have Maureen Washington Quartet with us for the third time in our Jazz Vespers. We just can't get enough Maureen Washington. And I'm so excited about that because she and I have been playing with set list all week. So if you want to see Maureen Washington sing Natural Woman, and who doesn't? I mean, really, close out your Thanksgiving weekend with her singing Aretha. I don't know what could be a better way to do it. So I hope I'll see a lot of you next Sunday night at 7 for Maureen Washington Quartet. This morning's message begins with a poem from Julia Kasdorf. You can tell that I spent a lot of the sabbatical collecting poems because poetry is showing up everywhere. Julia Kasdorf wrote this lovely poem entitled, What I Learned from My Mother. I learned from my mother how to love the living, to have plenty of vases on hand in case you have to rush to the hospital with peonies cut from the lawn, black ants still stuck to the buds. I learned to save jars large enough to hold fruit salad for a whole grieving household, to cube home canned pears and peaches, to slice through maroon grape skins and flick out the seeds with a knife point. I learned to attend viewings even if I didn't know the deceased, to press the moist hands of the living, to look in their eyes and offer sympathy, as though I understood loss even then. I learned that whatever we say means nothing. What anyone will remember is that we came. I learned to believe I had the power to ease awful pains materially like an angel. Like a doctor, I learned to create from another's suffering my own usefulness. And once you know how to do this, you can never refuse. To every house you enter, you must offer healing. A chocolate cake you baked yourself. The blessing of your voice. Your chaste touch. The healing power of us. I think we define healing too narrowly most of the time. The vision that springs to mind first and foremost is physical recovery from a very specific illness, like the cold that the Lingoods are experiencing right now. In reality, healing is a lifelong process. We are always having to heal. We are always at some stage of a healing journey every single day of our lives. We are recovering from an emotional loss, walking alongside someone who is struggling with physical or emotional pain, or coping with a physical illness or ailment, or its aftermath. In a few weeks, Melora will explore with all of you how we as a congregational community can serve as a source of healing for one another. But this morning, I want to focus a lot on the personal dimensions of healing. One of the key elements in our ability to heal is dropping our resistance to the source of pain. Almost a Buddhist-like non-attachment helps in this regard. For example, we might be angry as part of a grief process, but we can't and shouldn't get stuck there. The more we resist why we are in pain in the first place, do this with me, resist, oh, stop, the less we can actually deal with what it is that is causing the pain that we need to heal from. We will never be able to cope or adjust or heal from something if we are in this stance all the time. And the longer we resist, the longer it will take us to look squarely in the eye that with which we are wrestling and live with it or through it. There's a powerful TED Talk that Lucy Kalanithi, this spouse whose husband Paul wrote the beautiful memoir about his dying. Paul Kalanithi wrote a book called When Breath Becomes Air about his dying from a brain tumor in his mid-30s. His wife Lucy in her TED Talk says, and I quote, "Life is not about living in spite of suffering. It is living within it," end quote. In other words, friends, the need to heal, the fact that we will have to heal is a given in life. But how we handle those moments, how we deal with those moments, is anything but. I think we're challenged as well by a sort of pervasive sense that healing is a comprehensive, once and for all, permanent thing. I will heal, I will be done with it, Nola will walk down, hi Nola. Well, I will heal, I will get it done, and then I will move on. Right? We think healing is just like that. I will cope with my grief, and then I will move on. I will deal with my cancer diagnosis, go through the treatment, and then I will be done, or I will die, but I will just deal with it once and for all. But experience tells us that that isn't true. That isn't really how healing works. We heal, and then we have to heal again when a new facet of our old grief pops up again, or when we enter a new phase of treatment for that illness that we're struggling with, or when our mobility gets a little bit worse. Our life circumstances are telling us again and again that we will have to reassess and reevaluate what healing means now for us. Healing, it seems to me, the more I reflected on it this week, is both magical and as common as dirt. Every once in a while I thought, how do we heal? How do any of us ever heal from anything? It seems magical that way. How can we not simply heal and move on? What, after all, is the alternative to throw up our hands and sit in a puddle of loss and never get out of bed? But how different we might feel if we thought about healing the way we think about the processes of nature. That healing, like every other natural process in life, is a cycle that moves through our lives and changes us again. What offers you healing when you are in pain of any type? Where do you go for healing? Do you go to connection? Do you go to nature, perhaps? Do you turn to music or to art? And actually, what does healing mean to you? How do you know when you're healed? Is it related somehow to wholeness? Throughout the sabbatical, I was reflecting on the human desire to be happy. I have felt for some time that happy is not the right word about that which we seek. Not only is happiness not the right word, it's not even the right goal, actually. I have worried that the search and striving for happiness has left us often feeling bereft or disillusioned, and sometimes needlessly so. Too often we feel we're not happy enough, so we must not be doing it right. There's got to be a better happy there somewhere. So I have begun using instead the word content. Perhaps we human beings really seek contentment. During study leave, I wrote this in an entry. I won't really call it a journal entry. It's like my little musings log in late July. I wrote, "Musing today about the desire we seem to have for permanence. We want to be happy and to stay in a near constant state of happiness. We want to progress from one thing to the next and to move steadily through life, but often things are ragged. The spiritually mature way to go is to prepare our souls and hearts to be supple and flexible. We move into what is, and we glean what we can. We learn, we grow, and we change all the more because we seek it in each experience. Rather than turn away or resist, we move toward." This poem I just read speaks to this so well. Allow, by Dana Faulds. There is no controlling life. Try corralling a lightning bolt, containing a tornado. Dam a stream and it will create a new channel. Resist and the tide will sweep you off your feet. Allow, and grace will carry you to higher ground. The only safety lies in letting it all in. The wild and the weak, fear, fantasies, failures, and success. When loss rips off the doors of the heart, or sadness veils your vision with despair, practice becomes simply bearing the truth. In the choice to let go of your way, your known way of being, the whole world is revealed to your new eyes. End quote. So do this with me. Instead of this, do it again. Come on, resist. And instead of this, turning away, I don't want to see it. The poem would be like this. The poem's title is Allow. So if instead of resisting and turning away, instead of seeking happy, 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 we sought a genuine sense of wholeness and meaning and contentment, how different might our lives feel or be? It seems to me that is really what we're seeking. We're not seeking constant happy. We're not seeking to resist what is. We're seeking to find a way to allow. How much that might feel like healing. And so as all of this has been percolating for me over the last several months, contentment instead of happiness, healing as getting to that place of feeling content, there I was again looking at TED Talks this week when I came across the one that was just right. Emily Esfahani Smith, in her TED Talk, said that she got to her work by asking the question, is there more to life than being happy? And I read that and I was like, yes! And she said that what she's figured out is we actually have these four pillars that make up our sense and our search for meaning. So instead of contentment, she would say, we're not looking for happiness, we're not looking for contentment. She said what we're really seeking is meaning. We want to live lives that we feel are meaningful. And she said, you only need four things, just four, real simple.
Yeah, right.
Four things that we all need to feel that we've found meaning. Belonging. She says by belonging, she means being in relationships where you're valued for who you are intrinsically and where you value others as well. Purpose. Purpose, she said, is less about what you want than about what you give. The key to purpose is using your strengths to serve others. Three, transcendence. She says, transcendent states are those rare moments when you're lifted above the hustle and bustle of daily life, your sense of self fades away, and you feel connected to a higher reality. Now notice, you humanists can plug into this as well. Transcendence, any of you, regardless of your theological view, can plug in to a sense of transcendence, correct? She didn't say God, she said transcendence. Four, final pillar, storytelling. The story you tell yourself about yourself is what she says. Creating a narrative from the events of your life brings clarity. It helps you understand how you became you, she says. But we don't always realize, I'm quoting her here, that we're the authors of our stories and can change the way we're telling them. Your life isn't just a list of events, Emily Esfahani Smith says. You can edit, interpret, and retell your story even as you're constrained by the facts. I love that. So you can't make up your story, okay? I mean, you are constrained by the facts. But what she's saying, which I think is beautifully true, she gives examples. I know you're all going to go home and watch her TED Talk now. But what she says is that sometimes we get mired in the narrative of our own story that says, well, I figured it all out, but then I got stuck again, and I'll never figure it out again. Or we've created a narrative that says, I'm the smart one in my family, and I can't possibly be vulnerable. Or we've created a narrative that says, I'm only a good person when I do thus and such. Right? And that by rewriting and re-editing that narrative, constrained by the facts of what really happened, we can be freed by that to find some element of meaning. So to close, I want to give you just a few moments of silence to think about those four pillars and healing in your life as it is right now. I want to invite you to think about the places of pain and struggle within you and what might bring you healing. To think of belonging and purpose, transcendence and storytelling. Take a few moments of silence to offer yourself some sense of what healing might be for you now. May we each find ways to allow rather than to turn away or to resist. May we find the healing that we need to add meaning to our days. Blessed be, and amen.
Hold us in your steady mercy, Lady of the Turning Age.
Friends, steady mercy and peace, steady blessings of love and of life be yours now and always. Every time you have a sense of belonging and purpose, transcendence, and a sense that your story fits into the story of all life, then you are clear that you are here now to make the most of it, to love boldly and deeply, to offer your heart and your hands to writing that fairer page. May you love well in the days ahead, knowing that you are all you need, that indeed you are all we need. Blessed be, and amen.